The ziggurat was a series of high, broad steps. The Jedi leaped up to the next step, ran its width, and then leaped up to the one above, again and again, until they reached the roof. From here, they could see the hole in the ziggurat roof widening. The lines of giant boulders still danced their merry circles around Nyax. Luke led the others off at an angle to where each of the boulders in turn dipped down to within meters of the ziggurat's surface. As the next one swept low, they leaped, propelling themselves further with use of the Force, and landed atop the irregular Duracrete surface. Luke could feel it as Nyax detected them. The pale giant rotated in the air to face them, his smile changing from one of simple pleasure to one of malice. "This is going to be bad," Luke said. Mara nodded. "Any ideas?" "I have one." Tahiri knelt to improve her balance while she stared ahead. There was something in Tahiri's eyes that sent a chill down Luke's spine. "He could fight the Jedi just by feeling us in the Force," she said. "He couldn't feel the Yuuzhan Vong, so he had to watch. Well, I'm both." She rose and turned away from Luke and Mara, then took the long leap to the next flying boulder back in line. She raced its length, then leaped again to the third boulder down. "What do you say we take her at her word?" Mara said. Power flowed through Nyax. Such power as no being alive had ever felt. He raised his hands. He would crack the stone they rode on and send it and them hurtling down into the ruins. Something slammed into his back, just below the point where his internal armor plate protected him. His eyes snapped wide. He had not felt it coming. He used his power to overcome the pain. A second thing struck him. He felt bones in his lower back shatter. Numbness flowed across his legs. He exerted greater control over himself, desperately trying to force sensation into those limbs as he turned. His third antagonist, the smaller female with the yellow hair, rode another boulder, lying upon it and gripping it with one hand. She looked at him with alien mercilessness in her eyes. She barely registered in his special senses. She must have closed herself off to the power, reducing his ability to detect her. His ability to anticipate her moves. Something was wrong. He had the pain under control. He was full of the power. He should be able to make anything happen any time. He did not understand, for he had not been trained in the ways and use of the Force, that the catastrophic failure of the body's functions could interfere with use of the Force. All he did understand was that his control over the boulders, over the debris flow from the ever-widening hole beneath him, was faltering. Before he knew it, he fell, screaming into the pit he had created. All at once, the boulders came crashing down onto and often through the ziggurat roof. Luke and Mara leaped free, using their augmented power to soften their landing, and rolled up to their feet, looking among the rain of multi-ton missiles for a head of blonde hair. "There," Mara said and sprinted. The distance of a ball-playing field away, Tahiri lay atop a small dome.
"Face to Mara. Face to Mara. Do you read me?"
Luke skidded to a halt and pulled out his comlink as his wife reached and embraced the younger Jedi. "Mara's a little busy right now, Face." He leaped to one side and a mass of ferrocrete the size of a Y-wing smashed into the roof beside him. "For that matter, so am I. What is it?"
"Tell me that the whole mess with the Fountain of Rock was you."
"It was."
"We're inbound. So are a couple of Vong capital ships. You want a lift?"
"We do."
"We'll be there in two."
A constriction in Luke's chest, one he had been unaware of until now, suddenly loosened, vanished. Nyax is dead. Vicky, leaning against the side of the air taxi for support, finally heard the hum when its volume rose higher than the sounds of her own distress. It sounded like repulsors, and the noise floated in through the shattered viewport. She moved up to it to look. The ugly truth drifted up into her view, hovering mere meters away. Her heart lifted, then as swiftly sank.
Through the ship's viewport by its access hatch, she could see Mara Jade Skywalker staring at her. The woman's features were expressionless, but icy hatred of Vicky Shesh showed in her gem-green eyes, and that hatred froze Vicky in her place.
Vicky, I knew you were lying. I knew you would return here.
Unbelieving, Vicky turned. Danua Koo, his front a solid smear of blue-black blood, stood leaning against the doorway into the apartment. He coughed, a racking, painful sound, and blood dribbled from his mouth. His head hung low. But it did not matter. He was still more than a match for her, and he held his amphistaff in his hands.
I will now kill you, Vicky.
He took a faltering step toward her. He was already almost within reach with his amphistaff.
No, you won't, she said. Yuuzhan Vong can't kill me. Nogri can't. Jedi can't. You're all beneath me. There's only one thing in the universe that can kill Vicky Shesh.
She turned and stepped out through the shattered viewport. Luke and Mara watched her fall. Luke even felt it when she hit, a faint diminishment in the force.
How about that? Mara said. I get my wish.
The Yuuzhan Vong warrior who had confronted Vicky raised a handful of razor bugs to hurl at the ugly truth, then fell over on his back. His chest heaved once, then he was still. Shaken, Luke settled back in his seat and strapped in.
Now we can leave.
Faye said, ready for a run to space, explosion boy?
Always ready, poster boy. Hold on to your awards.
Kel lifted off, turned away from the ziggurat, and accelerated to full atmospheric speed. Luke's expedition returned to Aborleas that was changed, at least in the vicinity of the Biotics building and the other areas held by New Republic forces. Outlying buildings around the Biotics building had been smashed by frequent capital ship bombardments. Kip Duran welcomed Luke back with an unambiguous smile and handshake. When he'd heard the tale of Lord Nyax, he offered no criticism for Luke's handling of the matter. Han and Leia seemed at ease with one another, no lingering tension flavoring words they exchanged. They told Luke that, with the likelihood very high of an all-out push by the Yuuzhan Vong in the Piria system, they were postponing their next resistance run in order to give Jaina whatever support they could. Jaina was different, too, somehow at ease. She did not burn any less brightly for the loss of her brothers. She did not fight any less fiercely against the Yuuzhan Vong. But she was in balance, no longer leaning toward the dark side. She smiled easily and often. His family, recently torn apart and flung in all directions, not yet reassembled, was healing. It was the Biotics building's mess hall, but was not being used for that purpose now, and would never be used for that purpose again. Its tables were all arrayed with chairs only on one side so they could face the head of the room, the seats occupied by General Wedge Antilles, Colonel Tycho Selku, and Luke Skywalker. Now those tables were filled with divisional heads, squadron commanders, ship captains, spies, Jedi.
The Starlancer Project, Wedge said, is a laser-based superweapon roughly analogous to a Death Star main gun, with two important differences. The first difference is that it distorts space and time to accelerate its destructive force through hyperspace, allowing it to be used as a first-strike weapon against enemy star systems light years away. Muttering from those who were not in on the Starlancer secret filled the air. The Starlancer weapon uses a giant lambent crystal, a Yuuzhan Vong-engineered living crystal, to focus this power, and now it's ready for its final use. Oh, the second point of difference between this weapon and the Death Star main gun is this. The Starlancer beam doesn't work. It's a fake. The murmurs rose. Wedge saw Luke grin. Wedge raised his voice to carry over the babble to quiet it. The purpose of the Starlancer project is to dictate exactly when the Yuuzhan Vong in this system begin their all-out push against us. They know that the weapon threatens them. They have the example of Anakin Solo's lambent-based lightsaber to compare it to and to be offended by. They know that we've appropriated their technology, and this galls them. They know that once it's ready to fly, we can destroy their worldship in orbit around Coruscant. We faked up a low-power demonstration of this by positioning one of our capital ships outside the Coruscant system and firing off a laser battery attack at that worldship to coincide with the firing of our fake weapon array. So they know that as soon as we float the fully operational version, they have to hit us with everything they've got. And this ultimately will distract them enough to allow us to initiate a complete evacuation of this facility and to take this final battle in this system to them in ways they haven't anticipated. There were many words and expressions of relief after that statement. Wedge saw his officers exchanging glances. That's right. This defense is ultimately not a suicide mission, despite anything you may have heard. That was something of a deception. The New Republic Advisory Council and self-appointed Chief of State, Puo, had demanded that it be precisely that, a suicide mission. But Wedge had chosen to interpret his orders a trifle differently. The wounded and non-essential personnel have, over the last few days, been transported, very uncomfortably, I'm afraid, in the guise of cargo and other such deceptions, to our freighters and cargo vessels upstairs. Tycho. Tycho rose and hit a button on the datapad in his hand. Your revised orders have just been transmitted to you. You have an hour before things get underway. I suggest that if you have anything remaining here dirtside that you want to keep, you better gather it up now. If you have any questions, Wedge said, address them to your controllers. We have no time remaining here. Dismissed. Luke settled into his X-Wing cockpit with a noise of satisfaction. One after another, the elite squadrons, those that have been stationed out of the biotics complex all these weeks to reinforce the notion that this was the most critical point of Borlaeus' defense, announced readiness and lined up. Gavin Darklighter's Rogue Squadron, Jaina Solo's Twin Suns, Sabaas Sebatine's Wild Knights, Luke's Black Moons, Wes Janson's Tanab Yellow Aces, Sean Kirnerudo's Vanguard Squadron, the Millennium Falcon. Less than 2 kilometers away, squadrons off Lusankia dueled with Coral Skipper squadrons and capital ships moving in on the facility, but the elites wouldn't be reinforcing them, wouldn't be confronting the planet-level attackers. They'd be lying to the enemy instead. At General Antilles' command, the Rogues, Twin Suns, and Black Moons lifted off. The Starlancer pipe fighters lifted off in their wake. Then the other elites rose. It was a convoy of starfighters, blast boats, and one light freighter. And in some ways, it was among the deadliest armadas the New Republic had ever launched. On the holocam screen, Wedge watched the squadrons of the last Starlancer sortie take off. Alert Lusankia, he told Tycho. As soon as the pursuit is on, he's to initiate Operation Emperor's Spear. Done, Tycho said.
This, Chulkang La informed Harar, is it. Their all-out attack to destroy my son. How will it play out? The priest asked. All their best pilots protect the lambent vehicles. They expect us to send overwhelming hordes of coral skippers against that fleet. Once our fighters are poised to attack, they will initiate whatever means they have to confuse our Yamasks, to destroy communication among our forces.
Chulkang La offered up a nearly lipless smile.
But it will not happen so. Moments after our forces engage, mobile Dovin basal mines will enter the area and begin stripping the enemy shields.
All the fighters assigned to that engagement have been carefully drilled in individual pilot initiative. A disruption of Yama's control will not inconvenience them in the least. Their most famous fighters will be overwhelmed and destroyed. The menace the crystal represents will be ended. And with the ground-based fighters weakened by exhaustion and loss, the ground facility will fall within an hour.
Harar nodded. The old War Master's confidence was welcome in these uncertain times.
All these individual initiative fighters, they know not to harm Jaina Solo. They do. The gods smile upon you, Chulkang La. May it be so. Now, I must turn my attention to the battle to come.
Harar bowed and withdrew. He gave no sign of it, but he was most pleased. At last, the Yuuzhan Vong goals in the Pyria system were within their grasp.
Now? Tycho asked.
Wedge considered, still focused on the sensor display correlating all the data from the various squadrons. He nodded.
Lusankya, commence Operation Emperor's Spear.
Tycho listened to the response, then lowered the earpiece.
Lusankya's away. Start evacuation of this facility, Wedge ordered.
Kazdak Bul said, Lusankya is leaving orbit. We have reports that fighters are leaving her belly and escorting her.
Chulkang La frowned.
Did you not tell me earlier that all her fighters were at ground level, defending the infidel base? Yes, Chulkang La. Well? It was our peace brigade advisors who told us this, based on their listening to the talk between their fighters and their triangle ships. So, there was lying in that talk. That is my opinion. Have those advisors stand by on one of our ships. Kill one of them for this mistake. Every time a new mistake of this sort costs us lives, kill another. It shall be done.
Kazdak Bul returned to studying the blaze bug niche and listening to the villips on the wall. He then turned back to the commander.
The red triangle ship is now breaking from orbit. Good. That will be easy prey. She carries few weapons.
Chulkang La gestured to get the attention of his fleet commander.
Dispatch two Matalogs to eliminate that atrocity. It shall be done.
Lusankya turned with a slow awkwardness that no Star Destroyer commander would have tolerated from a chief pilot. Her maneuver was too great, in fact, and once her gradual portside turn was completed, her nose drifted a few degrees back to starboard before the mammoth vessel was correctly lined up. Then her thrusters engaged, and she began a ponderous acceleration straight toward the Domain Hul worldship.
Charat Kral, commanding one of the squadrons racing toward the pipe fighters and their heretical crystal, breathed a sigh of satisfaction. All they had to do was keep the enemy fighters in this region of space long enough for the support mines to reach this area, and the mines assigned to Jaina Solo's X-Wing would grab her, bring her into Charat Kral's grasp. Her starfighter was among the cloud of oncoming craft. The specially engineered auxiliary Dovin Basil on his coral skipper could sense that craft's specific gravitic signature, and it communicated its excitement to Charat Kral as a continuous buzz through his cognition hood. The oncoming starfighters had divided into squadron units and were mere moments from reaching maximum firing distance. Charat Kral selected a target within Jaina's squadron, the craft with the claw-shaped extensions. Then all the oncoming craft vanished. Charat Kral blinked, then focused his attention on his second Dovin Basil. The question he asked it was wordless, but understood. Where is the vehicle? But the Dovin Basil didn't know.
The four vehicles that the infidels called pipe fighters were still ahead in the distance, however. Shaken and confused, Charat Kral oriented toward them and kept up the pursuit, as did the others of his mighty Coral Skipper force. Soon they pulled within firing range of the flying blasphemies. Charat Kral's contempt grew as the foremost Coral Skippers of his formation began firing. The pipe fighters did not bother to maneuver. Perhaps their pilots were too inexperienced, too frightened. Charat Kral willed that thought away. It made no sense. Even the most inexperienced pilot could try to maneuver out of the line of fire, and these didn't. One by one, the four vehicles detonated under the plasma cannons of their pursuers, the crystal-bearing vehicle last. The thought came hard to Charat Kral. Were they even occupied by the living? Or could they have been abominations controlled by other abominations? Kazdak Bul looked inconvenienced at having to bring incomprehensible news to Chulkang La.
The Coral Skippers pursuing the Lambent Fighters report that all the Infidels' protective fighters have disappeared. Disappeared? Fled? No. It seemed to be an orderly jump into dark space. And there is more. Tell me. The Matalok sent to destroy the Red Triangle ship are gone, as is the Red Triangle ship. All destroyed? It put up an impressive battle for something so ill-equipped. Unknown. The Matalok commanders did not report their target putting up a fierce struggle.
Chulkang La scowled, but turned his anger away from Kazdak Bul. The warrior did not have much intelligence to offer, but it did require courage to deliver unhappy news to a senior officer. And this was unhappy news. Mysteries were piling up. He didn't like mysteries. They meant that he had not correctly interpreted every variable. And that was one way to lose an engagement. Once free of Borlase's gravity well, Lusankya fired off her hyperdrive, a micro-jump that left her escort screen of starfighters behind. The jump took her halfway across the solar system before a Dovin basal mine dragged her back into real space. This wasn't an unexpected turn of events. Her crew knew it would happen, though not precisely where. In terms of stellar distances, she was not far now from the Domain Hul worldship, commanded by Chulkang La, but it was not likely that she would be able to make another jump to get closer. The space between this point and that was doubtless thick with Dovin basal mines. Her crew immediately transmitted a signal on the fleet frequency. It said, in effect, "I'm here." Though she'd been built to carry a crew of more than 200,000, not including ground troops, things had changed. There were no weapon batteries to operate. Life support systems were shut down over most of the ship. Communications were restricted to a few comm channels. Shields and a few other critical systems were largely governed now by droids taken apart and then reassembled straight into system relay points. No one monitored fuel expenditure, thruster heat conditions, stores, supplies. She now carried a crew of one. A minute later, the squadrons that had just abandoned the pipe fighters appeared in her wake, yanked out of hyperspace by the same Dovin basal mine. They turned, moving up and around Lusankya, a protective screen. And Coral Skipper squadrons began moving against them. Lusankya was visible to the naked eye now. A tiny needle pointed straight for the worldship of Domain Hul. Chulkang La squinted up at it, irritable, his diminished eyesight insufficient to provide him with any details of what he was seeing. He gestured at an aide, who correctly interpreted the nonspecific motion and stroked the enormous circular lens in the center of the command chamber ceiling. It distorted, stretching details at its periphery into blurriness, magnifying the enemy ship's image until it dominated the scene. Kazdak Bul moved to stand beside him.
"Our pilots report that the Lusankya abomination is almost destroyed.
lack of responsiveness indicates that most of her crew must be dead and most of her weapons eliminated. She will not be able to send her lasers and bolts against us. Chul Kang La carefully positioned his feet so that the blow would not cause him to lose his balance. That would be unseemly. Then he swung his arm. His Von Dune crab armor correctly interpreted his haste and snapped his arm forward. His armored forearm cracked against the back of Kazdak Bull's helmet, sending his second-in-command staggering forward. Kazdak Bull regained his balance and spun. Chul Kang La could see the younger officer's features graduate from an expression of anger to one of surprise.
"You see, but you do not understand," Chul Kang La said. "They never intended to use their weapons upon us."
"Oh."
The younger officer's voice became unreasonably reasonable, a type of mockery useful in that it could be persuasively denied afterward.
"So this was simply an infidel sacrifice, an apology. They are saying, 'We are sorry for being bad. Here, have our greatest weapon.'"
Chul Kang La offered him a smile nearly devoid of teeth.
"You persist in being an idiot. I am proud to say I did not train you. You would have been my most repellent failure. Did you not notice? They never protected their weapons. They only protected their engines. What does that tell you?"
The younger officer scowled.
"That they wanted the thing to get here quickly. That their engines are their weapons. Are you sure you are not an Ooglyph masker with nothing actually inside?"
Kazdak Bull ignored the undisguised insult.
"Then their intention is to ram us. Wisdom, at last. So even an Ooglyph masker can learn a little when submerged in knowledge. Then we must make sure the abomination isn't capable of reaching us, of maneuvering adequately to ram us." "Very good. Issue the orders, Ooglyph masker."
Jaina could see the incoming squadrons on her sensors. There were a lot of them, 8 groupings at least, and the 3 squadrons at Lusankya's stern were losing strength. "Time for a goddess chase, don't you think, Char?"
"Ooh, your words thrill me, Great One."
"Don't be so thrilled that you screw up."
"Ooh, your supportiveness thrills me."
"Get back to business, Char."
"Right."
Char was silent for a long moment, during which the units of coral skippers got closer, moving in from all directions. Then,
"Nearest Dovin Basal minefield is ahead and to port. The goddess should aim for that. Piggy, when do the incoming units get close enough to recognize us by sight?" 40 seconds. "But if the goddess goes off straight toward that minefield, she'll pass close enough to them to see her." "Ooh, right. Adjusting course. Twin Suns leader, prepare yourself for the chase. 3, 2, 1, chase."
A missile roared away from Twin Suns 10, streaking off to port at nearly a 90-degree angle to their current course, aiming toward the largest gap between any of the inbound squadrons. Jaina activated her gravitic signature and transponder switches. Abruptly, her designation on the sensor board went to Twin Suns 9, while the outbound missile, just as instantaneously, became Twin Suns 1. There was a momentary wobble in the movement of skip squadrons to port. Then 4 of the squads in that direction changed course, converging on the missile.
"Well done, Char," Jaina said.
When she'd switched to the Twin Suns 9 identity, her comm system should have activated a program to alter her vocal characteristics, making her sound like an older woman, one with a deeper voice.
"Thanks, 9. And nice to have leader gone. She's so bossy."
Kip cut into the conversation.
"Listen up. We still have incoming contacts to starboard. Prepare to repel boarders. Break by shield trios on my command. 3, 2, 1, break.
While Belyeth held position within the Twin Sun's 10-11-12 shield trio, Char kept his attention on his special sensor and comm boards. The distant missile, codenamed Goddess, and now, courtesy of Silgal's biotechnical magic, characterized by the precise gravitic signature of Jaina's X-Wing, had onboard computers and logic programs that allowed it to execute its mission on its own. But Char could still feed it priority updates. He switched to a wireframe view of local space as the Goddess missile and the coral skippers pursuing it entered the Dovin Basal minefield. The green wire frame, superimposed on the scene, showed the spatial distortions caused by the mines and their gravitic influence on their surroundings. Char kept the missile's speed down to that of an X-Wing standard cruise rate, allowing the pursuing skips to gain on it. So far, they were still far enough in its wake that the pilots could not see it with their naked eyes, could not realize that it wasn't the true Jaina Solo. The Yuuzhan Vong pursuers were good. They were gaining faster than he expected on the missile. With his sensors superior to the missile's, Char drew a course revision on a screen, sending the missile on a path that would take it past mine after mine, while giving more and more pursuers the chance to approach it. He executed and sent the course revision, then lost sight of his sensor board as Belyeth sent the B-Wing into a veering turn that crushed Char into his restraints and caused his vision to blur, all despite the starfighter's inertial compensators.
"Comfortable?"
Belyeth croaked.
"Huh?"
Char grunted.
"Sorry, I was sleeping."
Though he could not see the distant X-Wing, Charot Kral's cognition hood created a glow in the distance, a glow he knew actually existed only in his mind, showing the enemy vehicle's position. And his opponent was good, as he knew Jaina Solo to be. But this day, she was flying with more skillful, reckless abandon than he had ever before seen, leading the coral skippers deep into the Dovin Basal minefield, doubtless hoping to elude them by passing through such a difficult and dangerous area at high speed. For a moment, doubt flickered in Charot Kral's mind. Why would she have left the relative safety of numbers, of her personal squadron, to lead the Yuuzhan Vong here by herself? There seemed to be only one possible answer. So she could attempt to kill them all without any of her fellow pilots to share the glory. Was she that overconfident? Was she that mad? Could her confidence be warranted? Chul Kang La made a noise of displeasure. The pattern of blaze bugs in the darkened sensor niche told the whole story of Charot Kral's pursuit. He did not blame Charot Kral for this momentary diversion, but was not happy at the lack of discipline shown by the other pilot. It would be best when that warrior was dead. Best if he died painfully and ignobly enough to discourage other warriors from similar acts of self-glorifying disobedience.
"What is wrong?" Harar asked. "This is the Jaina Solo pursuit?" "It is."
Chul Kang La pointed into the mass of blaze bugs, though he doubted that the priest, unused to the complexity of battlefield images, would be able to interpret what he saw.
"The pursuers are not acting in concert. It appears that one wishes to kill Jaina Solo. If we are lucky, this notion will not spread to the others."
"We cannot have that. We must capture her, must extract from her the truth about her trickery, the truth that she has nothing to do with our gods."
Harar turned to another of the command chamber's officers.
"Have my ship alerted and readied. I will enter the minefield and join the pursuit."
At Chul Kang La's reinforcing nod, the officer did as instructed. Then something changed in the blaze bug image, and for a moment, Chul Kang La thought that perhaps he too was misinterpreting what he was seeing. Two of the coral skippers closest to Jaina Solo, though too far away for her infidel lasers to have hit them, had disappeared, simply winked out. Even with his enfeebled eyes, Chul Kang La could see the blaze bugs that had represented them, now darkened, flying to the darkened back of the display niche, ready to re-enter as a new contact when needed. What had happened? Char Lat was getting the hang of it now. The method of calculating the gravitic pull of a Dovin basal mine on one of the goddess's missile passes, then coming near it again and using its own gravitic attraction to whip the missile around and slingshot it in a new direction. The missile, mostly solid state, not disadvantaged by the physical limitations of a living pilot, could survive much tighter turns and more strenuous G-forces than the pursuing coral skippers. On the last pass the missile made past one specific mine, the two closest pursuers had followed the missile's path exactly, had been caught by the mine's gravity, had been torn to pieces by their own daring. Plasma projectiles flashed past the bubble viewport of the B-Wing's crew compartment. Fascinated with his deadly toy, Char ignored them, relying on Belyath to keep him alive. Charot Kral sped along in Jaina Solo's wake, leaving his other pilots behind through sheer piloting skill. Kilometer by kilometer, he gained on her and knew at last that he was a better pilot than this infidel. All he had to do was get in range, disable her abomination craft, and wait for a capture ship to assist him. The tiny gleam he could only see in his cognition hood, the one that indicated Jaina Solo's position, grew to a size indicating that he should be able to make out some details of the X-Wing. But he could not. He could only see thruster emission from one engine. Yet it could not be moving so fast with three-quarters of its power gone. His coral skipper's gravitic sensors created the illusion that space itself was rippling in the distance ahead of Jaina Solo, the visual image of a Dovin basal mine. She seemed to be aimed almost directly at it. Charot Kral smiled. Her intention was clear. Take a close pass by the mine, using its gravitational attraction to sling her around and accelerate her beyond Charot Kral's ability to overtake. But it would not work that way. The mine would detect her specific gravitational signature, recognize her as a most wanted target, and reach out to strip her shields, perhaps annihilating her engines in the process. He had her. He had won. Her vehicle whipped around the Dovin basal mine and came straight back at him. The turn was so abrupt that no living thing could have survived it. So unexpected that Charot Kral sat stunned for a long, deadly moment. His surprise communicated itself to the coral skipper, which waited for instructions. Dodge? Defend with voids? Open fire? And when Charot Kral finally saw his target, made it out for what it was, a missile, unarmed, faster than any starfighter or coral skipper when it chose to be, he was only 0.2 of a second from impact. Harar's pilot turned to the priest. Jaina Solo is destroyed. It appears that Charot Kral rammed her. Harar shook his head. You must be mistaken. I think not. I witnessed the two images merge. There was energy released. Both images are gone. The pilot pulled his cognition hood back on, and then stiffened.
Well? You were correct. Jaina Solo is not where I thought she was. Not in the minefield at all. She is in the vicinity of the world ship. And Charot Kral? Still dead.
Eldo Davip sat alone at the control console of Lusankia, sweat dripping from his face despite the efforts of the chamber's cooling system to keep him comfortable. He wasn't on the Super Star Destroyer's bridge. That chamber, once brilliantly clean and huge enough for snub fighters to land in, was destroyed. He'd seen the holocam image of a dying coral skipper corkscrewing its way into the front viewports, crashing through, annihilating everything. But no one had been there. No officers, no droids. It had been left lit as bait, though no ship's controls operated there. All ship's controls were routed here, to an auxiliary bridge deep in the vessel's stern, a place where the command crew could operate if the stern were gone or the vessel somehow captured. Even this small chamber seemed empty and strange now. Davip, was the only person left. He spared a glance for the door at the back of the chamber. Newly installed, it was a crude plate of armor that would lift out of the way once and give him access to the starfighter that lay beyond. The starfighter was already pointed along the shaft that led to Lusankya's stern. It was a way out for him, assuming that the damage the Star Destroyer was taking didn't collapse the shaft, didn't ruin the starfighter. If it did, he was dead. Well, dead or alive, he was going to finish this fight with a bang. He returned his attention to the sensors, to the large signal that indicated the Yuuzhan Vong worldship ahead. Shulkang La watched as his fleet became uncoordinated. Suddenly, coral skippers swarmed like awkward trainees. Villips averted as the commanders of his capital ship stopped receiving gravitic orders. The spike at the nose of Lusankya was now visible through the viewing lens above. More of the ship had eroded, revealing even more spike. The gravitic interdiction of one of the triangle ships in orbit above the worldship was keeping his Dovin basals from maneuvering Domain Hul out of Lusankya's path. He ignored his commanders.
"Activate my sons, Vilip," he told Kazdak Bul.
A moment later, the Vilip installed in the most prominent niche everted and took on the features of Savang La.
"What news, my father?" the War Master asked. "Has Borleas fallen?"
"Borleas has fallen," said Chulkang La, his voice weary.
"And have you slain all the infidels? Or do some of their forces remain to flee?"
"Some forces remain."
"But still, a great victory."
"No, son. Limited facts can point at victory when in fact there is only defeat to taste."
The Vilip frowned.
"Defeat? You have achieved the conditions of victory. You have once more brought glory to Domain La."
"In a minute, I will be dead. Too many clever minds, however heretical they may be, have undone me."
"But..."
"Be quiet, my son. And know that my last words were reserved for you. Farewell, and may the gods smile upon you as they once did upon me."
Chulkang La reached up to stroke the Vilip. It inverted, carrying Savang La's expression of bafflement with it. Kazdak Bul stepped before him.
"We are on the verge of victory, old one. Pull one last strategy out of your mind. Give us that last success."
Chulkang La stared into the face of a warrior too stupid even to know regret. The old War Master held his silence. He'd promised that his words to Savang La would be his last. He would not diminish their value by breaking that promise. One of his officers, his voice quaking in fear or anger, or both, asked,
"Shall I give the order to abandon Domain Hul?"
Chulkang La nodded. Eldo Davip locked down the auxiliary bridge controls, then slapped the button for the new door at the chamber's rear. It slid open instantly, undamaged, revealing the Y-Wing beyond. A Y-Wing. He shook his head as he ran to the cockpit and clambered within. The starfighter was as old as he was, if not older. He suspected it was one of the assembly of spare parts vehicles that had been used to fabricate the pipe fighters. As he closed the canopy, the door into the auxiliary bridge snapped shut and another bulkhead slid open, meters ahead of him, allowing him a view of space flanked by the emissions of Lusankya's powerful thrusters. He started up the starfighter's engines but couldn't yet launch. A jury-rigged screen and set of controls went live, and once again, Davip could see through Lusankya's remaining forward holocams, could see instrument readouts. The dying Super Star Destroyer was drifting to starboard. This probably wasn't navigational failure. Instead, some Dovin basal on the surface of the worldship had to be exerting its gravitational power against Lusankya, trying to turn the vessel aside. It might work, too. No Dovin Basil was going to be able to entirely deflect the millions of tons of Lusankia to counteract the tremendous kinetic energy built up during the ship's constant acceleration toward the world ship. But a Dovin Basil might be able to turn her protruding spearhead aside to reduce the penetration of impact. Davip wouldn't have that. He resumed direct control of Lusankia and increased thrust output from her starboard engines, redlining them, bringing the spear point back in line. He'd just stay here and make sure everything went according to plan. Chulkang La watched as the sharp prow of Lusankia grew in the sky, approaching with a meticulous precision that he could, with a growing sense of detachment, appreciate. Up close, the crudeness of the protruding spike became evident. He could see scar-like welds suggesting that the thing had been assembled in sections within the triangle ship. Still, its simplicity and the fact that it had succeeded in serving its intended purpose was admirable. It entered the worldship's atmosphere, and a moment later, struck the viewing lens immediately above, and Chulkang La was gone. The prow of Lusankia hit the worldship. 8 kilometers up, before the shock of that impact had even been transmitted along Lusankia's body, Eldo Davip fired his thrusters and shot out of the vessel's stern. He passed between 2 of the vessel's thrusters and saw his diagnostics light up as they anticipated possible life support failure. But then, the yellows faded to a safe green. But still he was feeling vibration. Had he sustained damage that the diagnostics didn't detect? It took him a moment to realize that the vibration wasn't from his Y-wing. It was from him. As he set a course to take him to a formation of allied starfighters, he tried to stop shaking. But he couldn't. Coming around the far side of the worldship, Luke and Mara saw Lusankia dive into the worldship's surface. It seemed to Luke that a ripple spread out from the point of impact, either a shockwave or an animal contraction of pain. The Super Star Destroyer, her kinetic energy scarcely slowed by the impact, continued to plow into the worldship. 100-meter-long remnants of the ship's superstructure sheared off from the solid core, but that core plunged inexorably deeper into the worldship. In moments, as the orbit of the 2 Jedi brought them closer to the impact zone, Lusankia's core was swallowed by the worldship, her superstructure scraped off and left behind, mountain high on the worldship's surface. Then the surface of the worldship shuddered. Luke knew what that meant. 8 or more kilometers below the surface, the spear point of the core had exploded. Then the next 100-meter section behind it would detonate. Then the one behind that. A chain of destruction reaching all the way back to what had once been Lusankia's stern. The flash from the explosion was brilliant, and the force of the explosion jetted into the sky, looking for one brief moment like a red-orange lightsaber blade, kilometers in length. The surface of the worldship heaved, great jagged cracks flowing with a red-black substance Luke did not care to contemplate spread out from Lusankia's impact point as the worldship began to die. His ship protected by the remnants of Charat Kral's Special Operations Group. Harar watched the crash and detonation. He could feel blood drain from his face, could feel the strength of his legs begin to fail. He sat heavily in the captain's seat, wordless.
"The infidels appear to be grouping again," his pilot said. "Shall we join these coral skippers in a counterattack?"
"What's the point?" Harar whispered. "Take us back to Coruscant. Take us back where we can look on victory instead of disaster."
Savang La sat alone on his seat in his command chamber. He could not speak. The gods must love him. They had restored his arm to him. They had allowed him to root out treachery that had threatened to topple him. They had given him Borleas, whose defenders had at last fled. The gods must hate him. They had taken his father from him. Not only his father, but the fabled war master Chulkangla, whose methods of teaching, whose strategic innovations, though introduced decades before the war in this galaxy was launched, had made these conquests possible. The Yuuzhan Vong would be struck like a kufi in the guts by news of Chulkangla's death and the utter destruction of Domain Hul. Which was it? Had he earned the hatred or the affection of the gods? He sat back, hollow with the loss he had just experienced, uncertain within a universe that had just grown darker and stranger. This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Enemy Lines 2, Rebel Stand. This program was produced and directed by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Laura Wilson. Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Enemy Lines 2, Rebel Stand is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2002. All rights reserved, used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2002, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.